physics.
Okay, thank you very much. And I'm going to follow the tradition, but is, I really like to thank the organizer of this wonderful workshop. Indeed, it's remarkable that we have been able really to pull it off and bring all this community together. So I feel privileged to address this audience here. And like Nat said, I'm going to talk about relativistic optics, something which is, I think is, for me, represent kind of the second wind of nonlinear optics, if you want, and a new gateway to attosecond physics. Most of the things that I'm going to say, you can find it in a new review article in Review of Modern Physics that we wrote with Toshi Tajima and Sergei Bulanov. That's the last issue of Review of Modern Physics. I want also to thank my co-worker, at Michigan, Eric Power, student, Natalia Narmova, John Neve, who is here, Igor Sokolov, Viktor Yanovsky, Kang Han Hong, Takeshi Matsuoka, Biksu Yu, Maxim Shek, and my new co-workers from LOA, Victor Malka, Jerome Faure, Anthony Roos, Kim Tafolk, Andre Mizerovic, who is here also, and Rodrigo, and Christopher Harvey. And I want also to thank Toshi Tajima and Sergei Bulanov. Okay, so let's see. The contents of the talk will be as follows. I will talk a little bit about relativistic in terms of, I will try to draw a parallel with bound electron nonlinear optics. Okay, I won't have the time, of course, to do that for, I will pick up only a few examples. Among these examples, we have relativistic rectification, which is called Wakefield by everybody else, basically, but I asked the permission to Toshi Tajima to call it this way. You will see why. And and the key, of course, that's the key for high energy electron beams, proton beams, X-ray and gamma beams. Then I will talk about the possibility of producing attosecond pulses of photons and electrons, and very efficiently. Okay. Now, also I will talk about coherent X-ray radiation generation by coherent Thomson scattering. Then I will, discuss like Christopher has done, the possibility to go to the Schwinger limit. And then I will give a few examples in high energy physics, general relativity, Hawking radiation, extra dimensions. Finally, I like really to, since I will have the podium here, I would like really to introduce ELI, which is Extreme Light Infrastructure, which is a new infrastructure which is based on an exawatt laser, basically, which is right now has been selected to be on a large infrastructure roadmap of Europe. Okay, so it's very exciting. Okay, so what I like to do is, first of all, when you look at optics, I'm really struck by the fact that this field doesn't seem to have natural limit, okay, only horizon, okay, and that's true for. For myself, I've been in the field for 40 years almost, and I'd like to start with this peak power pulse duration conjecture. Okay, so the conjecture goes like, of course we know that in order to get high peak power, you must decrease the pulse duration. Okay, that is pretty easy. Now, the things that you may not realize that in order to get short pulses, you must increase the intensity. Okay, it's a conjecture; it has not been shown. This is something I would like to do, or maybe this could be one of the topics of this meeting. But indeed, it's true. If you look at, for instance, the evolution of short pulses as a function of E, okay. And you pick, you know, when the short pulses came about, the modular came about around 1970 or so, when it became serious. 1970, you know, you were in a picosecond regime. What is this? Yeah, that's right. Picosecond regime. And then what you were using? You were using saturable absorber, okay? Saturable absorber, well, saturable absorber, it takes only megawatt per square centimeter to saturate the medium, and then you can get your laser modlot. Then if you really want to go shorter, you have to go higher in intensity, and then use something which is not resonant, like a saturable absorber, but something which relies, say, on N2, which is not resonant, and a large bandwidth. And then you get, you know, indeed, you can go to the few optical limits. Now you are already pretty high. You are already at 10 to the 10 watt per square centimeter, gigawatt per square centimeter, okay? Now, if you want really to go shorter, then what you have to do, you have basically to ionize the material, the medium, okay? And what you do, and then you go into the attosecond regime. Now, if you now really want to go to, and I have a little bit of a problem here because my conjecture maybe doesn't work, because here, right here until now, we were gaining intensity, okay? We were shortening the pulse, but we were gaining the intensity, we are not losing the energy. Well, here it's not true, you know that we are producing attosecond pulses, but these pulses are not, you know, very energetic, of course. We are losing intensity. So my conjecture here doesn't really work well. But anyway, now if I want to go into the zepto regime, what I have to do, of course, is now to invoke now some new nonlinear effect, and you will see that this will be given to us by the relativistic nonlinearity. So, but I have to go to high intensity, of course. And now, if I look at this chart here, which shows the evolution of intensity as a function of years, then, of course, you can see the pattern, okay? The short pulses, clearly, roughly, okay? And right now, what you want to do is really to be in this limit here. And what has been mostly discussed in this audience, of course, is this regime here, right? Around 10 to the 14, 15, this regime here, okay? So what we are now, as I said, we have to increase the intensity in order to get shorter, okay? We have to go above 10 to the 18 watt per square centimeters, you know, in the visible at least. And right now I just want to mention that now the record in terms of intensity is at something around 10 to the 22 watt per square centimeters. And so you are already in very, very, very relativistic limit. Now the ELI proposal that we are proposing will be mostly at around 10 to the 26 watt per square centimeter. By the way, the nonlinear QED here is at 10 to the 29. Another 10 to the 29 watt per square centimeters, you know, it will take you something like a zeta watt system focused on 1 micron, and the zeta watt will be like a 10 MIF system, 10 megajoule system, 10 megajoule system, okay? 10 femtoseconds, focused on 1 micron. So it will be donc a formidable task to go there, but hopefully by using the shrinking of the pulse, we should be able to do it. Shrinking of the pulse and shrinking of the Rayleigh volume, we should be able to do it. Of course, so right now we have been in the relativistic limit. With ELI, we will be in the ultra-relativistic limit. I define the ultra, that's my definition of ultra-relativist now. It's when the proton will start to be relativistic, okay? and that will be around 10 to the 24 watt per square centimeter. So Eli will be two orders of magnitude above this. So, but with some relativistic, I will call relativistic boost, okay, relativistic compression, we may get into the 10 to the 29 or so regime. Okay, so let's talk now. I just want to mention, of course, in order to go into the relativistic regime, the systems are rather big, okay? This is a system which is has been designed to be a petawatt system, okay? So it's bigger, of course, than the 100 terawatt system. You know that when you are for this type of system, the size of the system basically, you know, is proportional to the energy, okay? So 100 terawatt, 10 petawatt, a factor 10, you of course find this factor in the size of the system. Now, and okay, I just cannot resist to show that was, we have shown the 10 to the 22 watt per square centimeters by using deformable mirrors, and you know, it's absolutely beautiful result. We have very short focal spot limited by the diffraction, 0.8 microns, okay? Remarkable result. Of course, if you don't use the DM, it's what you get. And you have a naught square here, 10 to the 4, okay? So very large already. I just want to mention. But you don't have to have a very huge laser, big systems. What's attracting to me is the fact that you can be in a relativistic limit with some millijoule type systems, okay? As long as you work in the lambda cube regime, and here we have the lambda cube, of course, is easy to understand it. What you have to do is to focus the pulse in space, of course, okay, by using the DM, deformable neural, and so on. You have to focus it in time, okay? So you have all your photons in this football, you know, volumes. Okay, the number of photons, of course, will be about 10 to the 16, 10 to the 17. Ron Chen, you know, was giving a talk, just mentioned to me that nonlinear optics, in fact, when it started, you know, started with one photon per pulse, okay? One photon. Okay, relativistic optics, of course, you know that for, if we use A naught as this normalized vector potential that we have used for this conference here, for very, very small A naught, much smaller than one, of course, the transverse motion, the electron's motion of, sorry, the motion of the electron is mainly transverse, okay? And it's proportional to A naught, okay? The along the Z is proportional to A naught squared. So if A naught is much less than one, of course, A naught squared is much, much smaller than one. So most of the displacement is along this direction. Now, of course, when A naught is very large, okay, more than one, and in the case of Hercules it can be a knot of 100, you can see that most of the displacement, of course, is along the propagation axis. And this is a very, very important consequence. If now you, this is of course that was a single particle, now if you shine your beam into a plasma, what you are going to do, you are going to push the electrons forward, leave the ion behind, you are going to set up, of course, this very, very large electrostatic field. So what you have done, in a way, is you took this is what I'm absolutely fascinated by that, and that's the reason why I call that relativistic rectification, once again, with the permission of Toshi, is you have transformed this electromagnetic wave in an electrostatic field, okay, and in a DC field. And what's remarkable is that this DC field is as big as as a transverse field, and I'm going to show you that. You have to just accept it just for a moment, okay? So, and if I say that, of course, if I know the intensity, I can find easily through using the impedance, the medium impedance, I can find the field, okay? So for 10 to the 18 watt per square centimeter, I have 2 teravolt per meter. For 10 to the 23 watt per square centimeter, I have 0.6 petavolt per meter. Okay, just to give you an idea what 0.6 petavolt per meter is, I'm taking 10 to the 23 watt per square centimeter because this corresponds to a petawatt system. Petawatt, you know, focus on one micron, that will give us 10 to the 23. That corresponds to 0.6 petavolt per meter, as I said, which means that it's slack, okay, 50 GeV, 3 km long, on 10 microns, okay? Okay. It is also, if you have to build a petaelectron volt, okay, it will take meters, and it will take, for you, the accelerator will have to go around the world, okay? So, but anyway, I think now, if that's true, and you will see that it's true, that if indeed we can really produce this enormous field over 10 microns, you have a new field. It's a relativistic microelectronics. Relativistic electronics, of course, exists, okay? Slack is a relativistic electronic device, okay? DCRF and all the big machines are relativistic electronic devices. But here you can maybe have a chance to put everything on the micrometers. And do not exaggerate. You're going to see that. Well, you want also to be this sort of provocative, by the way. So this is in this spirit. So this is Fermi, you know, this accelerator. So I used to find this field, this DC field that we could in principle get just, as I said, in back of the envelope calculations. Turns out that Sasha Pukov did a simulation, but he almost forgot that I didn't, okay? And I just reminded him at this meeting. He just took a 10 to the 23 watt per square centimeter beam, something that we have, and he's shooting this beam into a 50 micrometer target. And what does he get? It's a bunch, of course, of electrons in front, ions in the back, and of course, you have this electrostatic field in between, okay? Now, so 10 to the 23 watt. This is a really peak simulation, you know, done by Sasha Pukov, the guy who really predicted the Betatron oscillation, predicted the bull regime and the acceleration in the bubble regime, and predicted the harmonic high harmonic generation solid. And you can see that the field that you are getting here is 300 teravolt, 0.3 petavolt per meter. So I'm not very far off, okay? It's amazing. So you can see that at least this is backed up by simulation. Now, is it true? Of course, this thing works because you are aware of this famous nature where the three groups basically show about at the same time that it could accelerate electrons using this bubble regime. They could accelerate the electrons just by shooting the pulses into a nozzle jet and a gas jet and produce, you know, quasi-monoenergetic electrons. Okay, now these three groups were the group, of course, LDL, the group at LOA, and the group at Rutherford. Okay, and you are getting the result from the LOA group showed, I think, obviously, something like this distribution is broken now with a peak, you know, right there, at 170 megaelectron volt. The beam also, the beam quality is very good. So this is very, very nice. And Also, I was pleased to see that. Don't go away. Oh no. What's the okay. Yeah. I was pleased also that the group at Michigan, at CUSE, in the Focus Center, were able also to get a very, very nice quasi-mono-energetic beam. You know, this is about 160 MeV, and the delta here, the delta E, is about 15 MeV. So the 15 over 150, so you have about 10%, which is quite good. Now, also, if you want to do better, you can help, you know, you can help the reliability of the system by injecting, by using optical injection, something which was proposed some time ago by Don and Eric Ezeré, okay? And here they adopted the Eric Ezeré way, and they have a pump beam and injection beams, and you will see that by just changing the position of the injection with respect to the pump, the timing, they are able really to tune the the energy of the beam, okay? So this is quite remarkable, and they can go up to 300 MeV, but you see it's a continuous tuning, which is remarkable. Okay, now, let's talk about attosecond tuning, attosecond, okay? Of course, we have discussed attosecond generation, I will call by the bound electrons, you know, in the bound electron unit, you know, extensively at this workshop. And I'm not going to go over that. Now, I'm going to talk about the possibility of doing, of course, attosecond in a relativistic regime. And before I do that, of course, I have to mention the work of high harmonic generation, because short pulses, like for attosecond, start basically with the generation of high harmonics. And this is, you see that quite a bit of work has been done, not as much as the cast, of course, but quite a bit of work has been done with solids, and starting with Ulanov, who was the first guy to suggest the idea, and all these guys here. And really, of course, it relies on the relativistic motion of the electron, of the critical surface subject, you know, to this very, very large conglomerative pressure. So now, Sasha Pukov, you know, some time ago predicted, okay, that was 2004, right, a few years ago, predicted that the high harmonics, if we are doing it, we are doing well, this high harmonic generation, that is, that the pulse will really interact with the solid and not with the preformed plasma, then we could really get, you know, a very, very large amount of harmonics. You're talking about harmonic 10,000. And the decay here of the intensity as a function of harmonics is a power law. Really mild power law. It goes like omega over point negative 2.5, something like this, okay? And this is for different A naught. Okay, so something very, very reachable here. Now, so, and you pointed out, of course, the possibility of producing, you know, zeptosecond pulses, okay? Now, this work has been done in a 1D limit, okay? So 1D at 10 to the 22, you know, involves, of course, a lot of energy, because 1D means large pulse. Okay, so you have to be able to put this intensity over a large part, which means large amount of intensity, large laser, low red threat, I mean, you name it. So, okay, by the way, this, the work of Sasha was vindicated recently, you know, by this beautiful work from Rutherford, which really showed this power law. Okay, so now we are really on a good scientific ground. Okay? Good. So, now, as I said, the work of Sasha was 1D. Okay? Well, we know that we are not 1D. Okay? And also, if you really want to minimize the amount of energy, you really want to focus the beam, and ideally in the lambda cube regime. Well, we know, of course, what happened to the beam going into a medium like this. You have relativistic self-focusing. Now, this is, of course, under-dense medium. If you go over-dense medium, of course, you have something which is, we are going to see the reflection of the beam, which is going to be modified by the fact that the electrons are going to, I mean, the critical surface is going to be pushed by the electromagnetic field. Okay? So, I ask Natalia Anamova to simulate for me, for us, you know, what will happen, of course, to this type of reflection. Okay? Because this was unknown. And so she did it. So I just also remind you a little bit the setup here. So the beam is focused on 1 micron, okay? Because we want really to minimize the amount of energy. And also, if you focus the beam on 1 micron, that means you're focusing the beam on the fundamental mode. Okay, you cannot have any high spatial frequency in your fundamental mode. Okay, so you are sure, certain to have a very, very nice and clean and smooth, you know, mirror, so to speak. Okay, so and so what happened when you do that? Okay, of course, you are pushing the electrons, you are leaving more or less the ions beyond because the pulse is extremely short, only few cycles here. And but you see, look at the curvature of the critical surface. Okay, the curvature of the critical surface changes, and so you see that you can expect to have radiation this way, radiation this way, radiation this way, and so on. Okay, for each cycle. Okay. So here is a result, the 3D simulation, and I'm going to give you. Of course, you can see the dent you are making into the plasma. It's not symmetric because you have the E field. Okay, the E field. If you say depolarized like this, the E-field is going to slash back and forth its electrons along these directions, and on, of course, on the S-plane, it won't be like it will be symmetrical. So you expect that the symmetry is going to be broken here, and this is a line out of the the different lobe I showed you. So you start, let's suppose that you have a few cycle pulse, you see this lobe. A little bit like it was mentioned, you know, Monday, you know, about the upper second pulses. You have, let's suppose that the lobe number one will be produced, you know, by this portion of the waveform. Okay. Now the lobe number two, you know, because this thing is sensitive to, of course, the sine and amplitude. Okay. The lobe number two here will be produced by this part of the waveform. And lobe number three will be, because it's the most intense here, and positive in this direction, will be produced by this part of the waveform. Okay. So what is nice is that here you are producing a short pulse, and you are going to see that it's short. In fact, it's about 200, in this case, 200 attosecond pulses, but they are kind of isolated, okay, automatically. The efficiency, of course, is important, it's good because it's just a mirror, okay, to start with. So, so here you have about 200 attosecond pulses and so on. So this is Now, of course, if that is true, we should really be able to see that, okay? We should be able to see these different lobes, okay? So we try to do that. If we take now our laser, and we really dim the laser intensity much below a naught of one, then you see the spot, okay? Now, if you increase the intensity, and you are in a relativistic limit, then you should start to see this lobe. Okay, and this is what we observe. Okay, so now what is important, of course, with this technique, it is scalable. Okay, it is scalable. It's a scalable isolated attosecond technique. Okay, cogeneration technique. And how does it scale? First of all, you have to adjust. You have to adjust the electron density as a function with the A naught, with the intensity of the beam, okay? Because for large electron density, the plasma is going to be very stiff, okay? You are going to need a lot of intensity. For weak electron density, the plasma is going to be soft, so you are not going to need as much intensity. So the relation is simply that A naught divided by A naught, where A naught is a normalized to N critical electron density in your plasma. So you have to have this relation, A naught over N naught equal 2. If you have that, this is what you get. You get, as a function of the intensity, A naught, as a function of the intensity, you get this relation T over 600 divided by A naught. Okay? Sasha in his paper found 450 something divided by A naught. Two independent groups working on and found basically what I found, basically the same result. So this is, of course, extremely exciting. You are, of course, 100, A naught of 100. It's very, very doable. Remember that for this application, we don't need Rayleigh range, okay? We have just a critical surface, okay? We don't have a way to sustain this 10 to the 23 over, you know, a big distance. So only a few microns, okay? So that's very easy. But so here, we should be right now able to produce pulses in a range of 6 attoseconds, okay? Of course, with ELI, with 10 to the 26, I don't know where we are going to be. We should be in the vector second regime. N. Well, I mean, first of all, you can choose the material, you can ionize the material, you can differently, you can pre-ionize the material, so you can just adjust. But it's not very difficult, okay? I don't think that's gonna be. Okay, so now, of course, now we understand that we have a tool now, really, to go near the Schwinger limit, okay? And with relatively modest size systems, not a zeta watt system, okay? We talk about it. I'm not going to discuss that more, but it takes, as I said, 10 to 29 watt per cent just to break the pair. We should of course observe vacuum polarization much below, you know, like we observe nonlinear effect much below the dielectric breakdown of material. Okay, so I think I'm expecting something like that. So let's see. Let's do the math a little bit. Could we get into the critical field with a modest size system? Let's take Hercules, for instance. Hercules has shown 10 to the 22 watt per square centimeter, A naught of 10 to the 4th. Pulse duration then should correspond to 6 attoseconds. Wavelength, of course the wavelength now is less, so the focal volume will be much less. You estimate something like 10 minus 8. And efficiency about 10%. Okay, I mean, not really stretched numbers. And so 10 to the 22 watt per square centimeter should produce 10 to the 28 or so watt per square centimeter. So you should see pair breaking. Now, just want to remind you a little bit about this, what I think is a very attractive way to produce very short pulses. it's, well, first of all, we can, with the lambda cube, we can really use the energy very, very well, okay? We provide pulse isolation built in into the technique. Predicted efficiency, very good, 10 minus 1, 10 minus 2. So, as I said, because we focus the beam, the single mode that you have, obviously, and the fact that the pulse is very short, you press the instabilities, so that's beam, for, beam quality. And it relies on relativity plasma. So plasma is happy, you know, if really the higher the intensity, the happier is the plasma. So this is, so this should be scalable really to kilojoules. And so this is using something, I mean, technique which has to be, of course, worked on. So now let's talk about after second generation now of electrons, okay? Not just photons, but electrons now. Okay. Now, if we take this embodiment, okay, of light-matter interaction, well, you really have a, you have this, the target now is at an angle, okay, with respect to the pulse. What Natalia showed, Natalia Nonora showed in her simulation, was that if you shoot this type of target this way, at this A naught of 10, which A naught of 10 means 10 to the 20 watt per square centimeters, with this type of electron densities and so on, what you are getting are really at the second pulses in this direction here, and very short electron pulses. Okay, very short, much shorter than the wavelength of light. Okay, so that is very nice because you see this is much shorter than the wavelength of light. So if Monday, was Monday or Tuesday, Phil told us about what you can do, you know, when a bunch of electrons are much shorter than the wavelength of light. Of course, when you're scattering, you are going to have Compton scattering, but this time it's going to be coherent Compton scattering, okay? Because, of course, here, if all these electrons were diffused, okay, the scattering, okay, will go like the square root of n, okay? And, but now if, if, of course, these electrons are bunched, you know, very close together, then the scattering, of course, goes like n square. Okay, so you are very much in a case where, you know, where in Riemann scattering, Brillouin scattering, where you don't normally you don't observe much. Okay, but as soon as you start really now to organize the medium, then you have this efficiency jumps enormously. So now you have these electrons with a gamma of 25 MeV, so gammas of almost 100. 50, 100, something like that. So you are going to have, of course, this relativistic boost, okay, for gamma square. If you come now with this red light, it will be red, for instance, 800 nanometers, you are going to have a big boost. And this boost, of course, for gamma square, you take 1 EV, for gamma square, if you have 50, you know, that's it's easily in a KeV range. And, of course, very efficient. If you do the math, if you do the math, of course, for gamma of 100, you have photons of 40 kilovolts, and the efficiency is extremely high, okay? Close to 1, okay? Well, if it's 10%, you know, it's close to 1. So very, very large, because, of course, the laser itself has a lot of energy, okay? So it may have joules of energy, okay? So you could get maybe joules of X-ray like this. Okay, so now, of course, this is extremely exciting, okay, now for atto science, because let me show you that now we are able, with laser pulse, in a watt regime, but in a femtosecond regime, we are able to produce atto second of XUV, atto second of electrons, atto second of pulses of attosecond durations of X-rays, okay? So of course now you can play, right? You can do experiment, and you can excite your sample with attosecond XUV, probe it with electrons, you know, and so on. So this is remarkable because, you know, on a relatively small systems, you have basically all these possibilities, okay? And you can do your 4D imaging of electronic motion, okay, in atom, molecule, and solids. Of course, this is a very big part of the ELI project. Let's see. Now, okay, what now? Can we do, what could optics do in high energy physics? Okay? And so I'm coming back to these slides where we have 10 to the 23 watt per square centimeter, for instance, okay? We shoot that in 50 microns and we have these electrons, these protons. And like Sasha showed, that we can produce 5 GeV protons. Okay, short bursts of protons, attosecond bursts of protons. They are relativistic, so they don't spread, okay, anymore. And so what can you do? I showed you that. So in fact, you have electron bunch, proton bunch, and they're very short. And so you could really take this proton, shoot a target here, produce pions. And now these pions, of course, have a lifetime, limited lifetime, you know, 20 nanoseconds or more. So what you like to do, of course, is to increase the lifetime of these pions. Okay, in 20 nanoseconds, if you have a particle which lasts 20 nanoseconds, that is 6 meters, if you increase its mass, you don't have much time, because that means, you know, if you want to increase to the GeV regime, okay, it will take you kilometers to do it. So you cannot do it, basically. But here, because you have this violent, this prompt acceleration, you can do it, okay? Because now you produce these pions, and now you can imagine that you have a short pulse coming here. It will have to be, you know, of course, a big short pulse, and then very lot of muscles, and you we will be able right now to increase the lifetime, or to increase the energy of the protons, and increase the lifetime of these muons, these pions. You increase the lifetime of the pions here, and the pions are going to decay. Okay, it's going to decay in muons and neutrinos. So you will be able now to produce beams of muons and neutrinos. Okay, it's very exciting. Okay, now the other, of course, intriguing question is, of course, ultra-intensity and general relativity and black hole. And of course, you can produce these incredible accelerations. Okay, the accelerations basically will be in a range of 10 to the 25 to 10 to the 30 G. Okay, and of course, if you evoke the main postulate of general relativity, which says, you know, gravity equals acceleration, then you can say, you know, what is huge acceleration correspond in terms of gravity field, okay? And so you can find, you would like to find the size of the black hole, and you can, I mean, of course, what you find out is, in order to get this type of acceleration, you have to be near a black hole. Now, what will be the size of this black hole? You can find that relatively easily. They will be for A naught. There's a very simple relation. Size of a black hole directly inversely proportional to A naught. Okay? And the wavelength of the laser. So it's the wavelength of the laser divided by A naught, roughly speaking. So A naught of 1, you have black hole of 1 micron, or equivalent. A naught of 10 to the 6, if you are able really to go to the Schrödinger limit, means A naught of 10 to the 6. That means you have a black hole of the size of a Schrödinger, of Compton wavelength, I'm sorry. So, of course, course, don't ask me questions, you know, after this. I will give you, by the way, the telephone number of Toshida Jima, so if you have questions, you can give him a call. He's in Japan, so careful about... Okay, so now, of course, if you have this very, very small black hole with this huge gravitational field, then you can find that in order to observe Hawking radiation, that is, that the pair will be broken, okay, by the gravitational field, you find the size of black hole, that means the size of basically A naught, or the intensity, of 10 to the 30 watt per square centimeter. Now, again, I mean, I'm going to give you, as I say, Toshida Jima's phone number is right here. Okay. Now you, of course, if you have these violent accelerations, you know, the distance between your horizon decreases. If the distance becomes so small, then the wavelength, you know, of wave function, so wave function can tunnel through, then you can see it apparently. And you can also detect extra dimension. You know that now the Gauss law has been detected, I think it's been checked with centimeter size, okay? Well, maybe by using these very high intensity lasers, you could really check the Gauss law up to the n equal 4 dimensions. Okay, I'm sorry, it's n extra dimensions. Okay, so in conclusions, of course, what I'd like to say is right now, of course, optics until now, basically, until 10 years ago or so, you know, was really physics atomic, right? And you have seen at this conference, basically, everything which was discussed was atomic physics. But now, of course, we understand that optics is going to penetrate into, you know, the nuclear physics field, into high energy physics, into astrophysics, into cosmology, okay? And the energy characteristics, okay, which was typically of the EV in atomic physics, now will certainly go, you know, over maybe 10, 15, or 20 years to the theta electron volt, okay? And I believe that, okay? And also another way to see the impact of all this work is that you see that we'll be able really to re-explore different strata of matter, okay, up to maybe the quark level, where by now we are really somewhere here. Okay. So it's exciting, of course. Now, I'd like to use a few minutes now to describe a little bit what has been presented to Europe, okay, and which is called the Extreme Light Infrastructure, ELI, okay, and extreme by its pulse duration, extreme by its intensity, extreme by the energy of its radiation and particles, okay. And recently in June, okay, ELI was selected to be on the European roadmap of the very large infrastructure. You can learn about ELI on this website here. This is basically, in fact, it's a scientific case of ELI. Okay? So now we have a lot of work to do because we have this infrastructure. Right now, we're going to build an exawatt system, it will cost us something like 200 million euros. Okay? So it's something which is needs, of course, a lot of work and. It relies, I mean, basically, he has three scientific pillars, okay? The first one is, of course, the interaction, light-matter interaction in this very, very ultra-high intensity regime, okay? And the second is, of course, at the second size, okay? Because, of course, always this intensity, this very large intensity, it's a way, okay, to produce short pulses. That's the way I see it, okay? And so that also we will be able to explore certainly at the second, going to the second field, okay? And also what we would like to do is to have, in this infrastructure, we have to have dedicated beams, okay? That will be dedicated really to user, okay? Because they will be so very unique, okay? Now, you see, with if you 1 GeV recently has been produced, okay, 1 GeV electrons has been produced with 30 terawatt pulses, okay. Now you can see how many GeV you will be able to, of course, maybe proportionality is not right to it's fallacious, but nevertheless, okay, you see, for instance, 30 terawatt to produce 1 GeV, if you have 1,000 times this, okay, which means if you have 30 petawatt, you should be able to produce TeV. And in fact, if you look at the number a little bit more closely, well, you find this answer, roughly, okay? So with this, it's very appealing to see that we will be able to produce maybe up to the TeV, in fact, maybe more than a TeV, okay, with the ELI system. So it's, of course, it's extremely, extremely exciting. So the exawatt will be, in fact, composed of a front end. The front end will be designed and built by the Garkin group, by Karen Kras group. Okay, here we are talking 5 joules, 5 femtoseconds, very challenging, 100 to 1,000. I don't like this number, 1,000. Even myself, I found it too hard. But anyway, I mean, very high rate, right? So that would be a petawatt, very high rate, right? And then the first phase of this program called for the construction of one beam, okay? And one beam should be able ready to put out something like 40 to 70 petawatt, okay? With one shot per minute, with a little bit more money, you could go one shot a second, but one shot per minute is already pretty good. So that you have a single beam line and 70 petawatt. And then if this is successful, then we will have more, you know, 4 or 5 beam lines, and in order to get into really the regime between 100 petawatt to a megawatt system. And what calls for 10 kilojoule in 10 femtoseconds, that's the exawatt, and 1 kilojoule in 10 femtoseconds, this is for the 0.1 exawatt. That you can really do the type of work which was already simulated by Sasha, you know, in his simulation. So it's very exciting, and there's a lot of participating countries right now, you know, France, Germany, United Kingdom, Spain, Italy, Greece, Lithuania, and Austria, and that has just started, okay? So now, just finished, and I'd like to thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay, we have a few minutes for questions.
So since you brought up zeptoseconds, this is really kind of a comment, but it's really also kind of a question and challenge master ultrafast laser designer, and it's this. This Schwinger limit, you presented this simple calculation of the Schwinger limit, which is approximately right, and basically the idea is that you accelerate an electron, a relativistic electron, to high enough energy to be able to pair produce in a Compton wavelength. This is the, that's the, that's the, that's where the the number is 10 to the 29 watts per square centimeter. That's the field required to do that. In a Compton wavelength, it'll accelerate up to MC squared.
That's right. I mean, you have to accelerate this electron in a kind of a valence.
Exactly. And we've all seen this or even talked about it in talks, right? So one thing that isn't much discussed, and you didn't actually mention it either, is, okay, so how long does that take? It doesn't take a full cycle. And the answer is, it takes...
Yotta second.
I think it's 10 to the minus 21. I think it takes about 2 times 10 to the minus 21 seconds.
10 to the minus 24. Yotta second. I did the calculation.
Okay. So I guess I'm wrong. So, but my challenge is the same.
No, it's very simple. I mean, it's lambda versus...
But the challenge is... But the challenge is the same. So how do you... How could we get to that time scale? Because that, of course, would be the interesting time scale for an electron interacting with the quantum mechanical vacuum.
Well, you know, as I said, if you here we are really stretching, okay? I'm not going to put my hand in the fire here, but it's... okay, of course, you know, a yotta second, it's also, you know, the time for the electromagnetic wave to go across the dimensions of an electron, right? Or a quark, right? It's even bigger one. I mean, so okay, that order, okay? It's about that. Factor 2 pi. Now, if I am extrapolating this curve, okay, which says I will be, let's see, I said at 10, I need a naught of 10 to the A naught 10 to the 3 to get to the zeptosecond, I mean, thousand zeptosecond. One femtosecond, thousand zeptosecond. Okay. Now I'm going to take about 3 orders of magnitude. So I think with A naught of 10 to the 6, I should be able to get in this limit. But I have to do that. Math more carefully, but I'm not going to claim that we are going to time resolve the breaking of the pair, okay? Like we can now try to time resolve really the tunneling of the electrons, okay? That we are going to do, we have to work on that. We have to ask for more money on that.
It's, of course, if you just rely on this lambda cube regime and don't set any filter, it's the scaling you get probably. Mm-hmm. It scales like 1 over A. However, if you just remove all lower harmonics, you can reach zeptoseconds much, much earlier, amplitude 20 maybe. So it's within reach.
I'm not picky. I know that we have a lot of room, okay?
Right.
We have a lot of gas under the paddle, you know, the middle. You know, this is very slow. I mean, we are not picky. Already with the numbers we are talking about, we should be in a zeptosecond regime. Filtering or not filtering. Okay, we should have zeptosecond features. Okay, with the corner. Now, by now.
Function of wavelength. Just let's, in the scientific case of FEL machine, I saw some kind of calculation in that sense. I mean, for example, if you have a 1 kV radiation and you have 10 to 21, or let's say 10 to 22, or even both, watt per square centimeter, but there, you have a ponder motive force which is quite weak.
Very weak, yeah.
So, do you have some just idea or what is this relativistic regime is somehow different because the ponder motive force is very weak?
Well, the regime is different, as you say.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have to use it as such.
But this is relativistic optics already. I mean, if you look at the intensity, you shake.
Yeah, but I mean, this one, you have, clearly the particles are relativistic or ultra relativistic by looking at the electrons. You can focus more
slightly. That's the point also. You can focus to the wavelength also, or angstrom. It's in the horizon, it's somewhere also in your horizon of relativistic optics, changing just the wavelength to KV.
Certainly, I mean, we will be able to, anyway, to produce massive amount of X-rays, of coherent X-rays, okay? As I said, if you have a kilojoules of visible photons, okay, and you're producing, you know, gamma rays, you know, by using precisely, you know, coherent quantum scattering, with, you know, 100% efficiency of, in that order, you know, you have kilojoules of X-rays or gamma rays that you can focus on an extremely small
And explore new regimes.
Very volume. So, a new regime. Thank you.
Okay, so just a comment.
Did I understand it correctly that because of this effect that Sasha has calculated, charge separation, you can get a large increase in the field compared to the field of the laser itself?
It's the same.
Is it the same?
So it's about the same. That's a big thing.
Yeah.
It is about simple, I mean, of the order of. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's not anything.
Hmm? Yeah, it's a longevity null, of course.
But it's not anything that will help you to polarize vacuum at lower intensities.
Why not?
Is it?
Yeah. The problem, you are going to have difficulties, you know, to dissociate, you know, the electron and positrons, if you have really a lot of electrons around and a lot of positrons around, you know, of proton around.
So if you take this effect into account...
You have to do this
account.
Experiment, you know, vacuum breaking in absolutely the best vacuum possible. Mm. You don't want that to do that in a plasma.
But if you take this effect into account, you expect some pair production at 10 to the 23 watt per square centimeter of laser intensity?
No. Because, as I said, the DC field, roughly speaking, is the same than really the transverse field of the laser. And we know that in order to go to the Schwinger limit, you need 10 to the 30 or 10 to the 29 watt per square centimeter. So you cannot do it this way. You cannot do it in this field that is produced by the charge separation.
Well, let's thank Professor Moreau for pointing us to this ever receding horizon.
Thank you.
We have a break now.